To our listeners, welcome to the Women Governance Trailblazers podcast, where we listen to the journeys of trailblazing women in the corporate governance field, their passions, struggles, and commitment to improving how companies and boards function. My name is Courtney Camlett, and my co-host is Liz Dunchy.
Hi, everyone.
Liz and I are both super passionate about governance, and we want to spotlight some of the trailblazing women who share that passion. We love connecting with guests from different paths and industries to hear their perspectives on what surprised them in their career and where they think the field of corporate governance is going. For this episode, we are excited to be talking with Suzanne Naglucci. Suzanne has a 20-plus year track record of leadership successes across publicly traded and privately held technology, retail, and e-commerce companies. Suzanne's professional background is strongly rooted in bringing new technologies to market, driving product development, rebranding organizations, and transforming business models to realize greatest revenue potential and shareholder value. Suzanne currently serves on the NACD's Research Triangle chapter as chair and board director, where she supports the chapter's community with educational programs focused on exceptional corporate governance. Drawing from her prior experience as a CEO and chief marketing officer, Suzanne also provides board readiness and executive coaching services to C-suite leaders. Suzanne served as president and chair of Onboard NC from 2021 to 2024. Suzanne recently served as independent board director for private equity-backed technology firm Teradata, where she assisted the software leader in the international education and travel risk sector in navigating a changing market landscape. Suzanne also served as board director, president, and CEO for Charles & Colvard from 2015 through June of 2020. Before joining Charles & Colvard, Ms. Naglucci served as Chief Marketing Officer and Head of Global Services, Product Management, and Sales Operations at Channel Advisor, a SaaS multi-channel e-commerce solution provider that she helped prepare for an IPO in 2013. Welcome, Suzanne, and thank you so much for being here today.
Thanks, Courtney and Liz. It's a pleasure to be with you ladies today and to be included in this podcast. You've had some amazing guests over the years, and so I'm just thrilled to be here to share my story.
We are thrilled to have you. Thank you so much. And you have a very impressive background, as Courtney shared. You've been part of a management team taking a company public, and you've also served on public and private company boards. Tell us more about your career path and the highlights that stand out to you.
Yeah, sure. So I grew up through the marketing ranks, primarily with business-to-business software firms, from startup to large Fortune 100 companies such as Computer Associates and SAP. I was really fortunate to have early access to the boardroom as the marketing lead and eventually as the chief marketing officer. And what this did for me is it elevated my understanding of the P&L, and It offered me this firsthand view of this intersection between go-to-market strategies, where I was focused as the marketing professional, and corporate risk management, and then developing shareholder value. So it's this really interesting three-legged stool that sort of formed this foundation of my understanding of governance. And it was a great education, kind of business school education in real time for what was later to come as I became that governance professional. So I'll share a couple highlights. From 2002 to 2019, I was with a company called SideQuest. They're now called Jagger. They were a B2B exchange that grew out of the dot-com era. And when I joined, they were publicly traded. They were a penny stock. They had gotten their second delisting notice. It's a great time to take a job, right?
Lots of exciting things happening.
It was very exciting. They did a hard pivot, and I knew that walking into it. So yeah. We took this company private through a PE firm and management buyout and flipped it into a successful B2B SaaS platform. It was a really exciting time.
Cool.
It was kind of hard to emerge from that dot-com era, but they had built some wonderful assets that we could use as this flip. So we did that, and it was such a great learning experience to transition from being publicly traded to PE-backed. I really learned an awful lot about how PE companies look at governance differently than publicly traded organizations.
Yep.
So I really got a chance to see two sides of governance being in that one role. So that was sort of my beginning to governance was 2002 to 2009. And then I had the opposite experience between 2012 and 15 when I served as CMO and head of services and product management at Channel Advisor. They're a B2B e-commerce platform, and I joined them to help prepare them for an IPO, which took place in May of 2013. Honestly, one of the pinnacle parts of my career. It was really fun to dress the New York Stock Exchange and be on the only woman on the platform ringing the bell.
It's also satisfying to see your work come to fruition when you do an IPO and you've gotten both sides of it with taking a company private and then also doing the IPO.
Yeah, that's really helped shape my view on governance because there's such different rigors being on both sides of being public and being private. And so it really helped shape this underpinning that brought me to where I am in my current career. So I would say this is one of the big highlights. We went through an overhaul to prepare for the rigors of being a publicly traded company. And that's when I knew I was destined for a future career in the boardroom. I felt there were so many things I learned about preparing for that IPO that a lot of other companies, they're getting to that point. They want to cross that threshold. What do they need to do? And so I wanted to take those learnings to the boardroom. And so I started a pathway to being an independent director. I thought the monies that we gained from the IPO helped us with this massive global expansion. And I found myself in South America and Australia and China and all over Europe. And I was on a plane or, in a hotel room 3 weeks out of four. It was a great time, an exciting time, and great to see a company have that kind of capital to do that kind of expansion. But I was exhausted. And so I thought, this is like the time for me to take all of these learnings and they're fresh, right? And let me turn them into an independent board sort of portfolio career as I sort of slide into, the latter part of my corporate work. And so I started going to market and letting folks know that I was interested in an independent board role. And my first independent role came along in 2015 with Charles & Colvard. They're a provider of ethically grown gemstones and ethical jewelry. And so I started there as an independent director, super excited to have my first independent role. And within 2 months, I wound up being the CEO. So my first attempt at moving on to corporate governance as a career path didn't go so well. Two was a great experience. What a learning experience for this one. It was a nano cap. I came in, they were about $20 million in annual revenue. I arrived in 2015. They had gone public in 1997. And they went public simply as a capital raise, should never have been a publicly traded company. And so you can imagine at $20 million what the overhead of being publicly traded is like. And that was just it was a real challenge at a time when we had about 18 months of runway. They had built a sales model through distributors, and distributors were finding that this gemstone and this jewelry was picking up a little momentum, and that was putting downward pressure on the sale of their diamonds. And so the channels that we were selling through were trying to sort of squash this growth initiative that we had. And we thought, you know what? We are just going to pivot in a big way and we're going to go direct to consumer. And so we did, and came this direct to consumer brand, sold mainly through e-commerce online, which is why they brought me in the first place for that e-commerce experience. We raised what was really a secondary some dozens of years later. We did a public offering, raised some capital, and then went through this full pivot, got profitable, and had six profitable quarters before the pandemic hit. And so we grew it up, and that was super exciting. I will tell you that the governance story here for me is the intersection with the shareholder. I had always had great experiences being in the boardroom as a C-suite executive, but as the CEO and as a board director, this was the first time I really had that firsthand intersection with both the investment community and then my shareholder community. And that was almost a rounding out of my governance understanding, this underpinning. And that's what then brought me to the future career, which was really in corporate governance. So those are my three highlights, all good experiences, some stubbed toes, here and there. And it was just an awful lot of fun. And I learned so much from being with boards and super intelligent people that had been there before me that gave me that chance to stand on shoulders and learn from others and to excel, because I had strength around me.
Interesting and unique path. Usually you see someone who's done C-suite to board, and you've kind of done C-suite to board to C-suite. So that's fantastic.
What was the shareholder base for Charles and Colvard when they were, if they were nano cap, like did they have institutional holders or what kind of shareholders were you interacting with?
Most of them were really friends and family who participated in the IPO. It was, I would tell you, Liz, I would get phone calls from people that had 10 shares. What do you, and shares. And these folks needed just as much attention as the people that, had hundreds and thousands of shares. And so it was a real mix, but they were really individual investors as opposed to institutions. It wasn't until we did the additional public offering that we wound up with institutional investors. And that was a whole experience of bringing them up to speed on who we are, because the market didn't really know who the company was. And to get them interested and get them engaged was a real experience.
Oh, that is so fascinating. And that's really cool that they still had holders from the IPO like 20 years later. That's great.
I still have my Charles and Colvard earrings. And that's where I first met Suzanne, was at an event
Oh,
for the
cool.
Thanks for wearing them proudly. I appreciate that, Courtney.
Still on the governance thread, you currently serve as board chair for the National Association of Corporate Directors Research Triangle Chapter and previously served as the chair of Onboard NC. How do you keep your pulse on the ever-changing governance landscape, and has AI affected your approach to staying informed?
I'll tell you what, the good news is that there's a breadth of organizations producing some wonderful board governance insights. The challenge is sorting through and assimilating all of that data. I personally turn to really highly trusted organizations for my ongoing education. Some of my favorites include NACD, of course. I'm a little partial to NACD, EY's Center for Board Matters, Deloitte's Center for Board Effectiveness, KPMG's Board Leadership Center, NASDAQ's Center for Board Excellence. All of these are terrific resources that you can trust because all the big four are in the boardroom helping advise these organizations. So what they're writing about is really reflections on what's truly happening out in the market. And I'm a little cautious on the AI side to answer that part of the question. I want to make sure that I'm making strong decisions based on strong data. Remember the old adage, garbage in, garbage out? AI is a little bit attuned to that because it's filled with some, ineffective and wrong information. And so my approach has been, let me choose the resources I really trust, put them in my version of AI and have it assimilate information for me. So one of the things I think it's really, really good at is taking volumes of reports and thought leadership pieces and boiling down the key points for me so that I can stay truly informed. I might then be informed about things that I want to go and further read and get more information about, but it's coming from these trusted resources. So rather than going out and using an AI tool and saying, what kind of outline should I bring to my next board meeting? I'm not using AI to form critical decisions. I'm using it actually to digest and bring forward and assimilate information that's going to help me make better decisions and bring true market data forward that can help inform decisions I might make with my boards. So hopefully that's helpful to folks out there. These resources, I will tell you, have I share them with all of my clients. I do some advising on the board readiness side. These are places where I send people where I know they're going to get trusted and accurate information.
Yeah, I've been using AI in that manner as well. Like, I get hundreds of newsletters in my inbox. And so, using AI tools to pull out the key themes, because a lot of it is repetitive, but it helps to see a summary of how frequently a particular topic has been mentioned so that you know if it really is like something to pay attention to, or if it's everywhere, just kind of a niche thing, and then pulling in other data points as well. I find that really
I agree.
helpful.
I do think we're eventually going to see AI in the boardroom. I don't think we're ready yet. Where I am with my boards, I see it used on committee calls to maybe keep some notes, but I still don't see it in the boardroom and the actual board meetings. There's still that reticence to bring in a tool that's going to be recording you and the pressure that you may have to make public some of the information that it's captured. But I think we're going to get there, and I think we're going to get there pretty rapidly. So my advice to people that our governance professionals and are in the boardroom is to stay on top of it and understand the ethical reasons that you may or may not use AI and where it's best and most appropriate to use it today. I would take the cautionary side of it, especially with corporate boards, until it's a proven commodity.
Yeah, relief to all of our corporate secretary and lawyer listeners that you're cautious about the AI note takers.
There is still a lot of legal and reputational risk using AI in the wrong context. And so rather than have it an issue, it's easier just not to use it in the boardroom at the moment until we have better tools.
Yeah. Well, you're also a big proponent of networking, and that's something that we can all improve on, I'm sure. Do you have any tips or tricks for expanding one's network and even more importantly, perhaps for maintaining and deepening professional connections?
Yeah, you are right. I am such a huge proponent of networking, and especially for people that are eventually seeking a corporate board role, networking is key to finding that position. Over 90% of board roles are filled through network connections. So here are my thoughts for your audience members. I would leverage large board governance organizations such as NACD or the Private Directors Association, PDA. These people do all the work of getting all the board professionals all in one room. So you can leverage these organizations and not only have a great networking opportunity, but you also get some education from attending the events. And so let them do all the heavy lifting for you, and you can show up and take advantage of the meaningful people that are in the room that you get to network with. I would say also, don't overlook the importance of your industry associations. You know, I've observed that most everyone's first board role is really associated with the industry that you're in. You're being plucked and considered because you bring this industry expertise to the boardroom. It's not because you're a board professional, it's because you have industry expertise. So don't lose those industry associations. There's a lot of board influencers in many of those associations. So keep your certifications or keep your associations with them and stay in touch with the people that are very close to the markets, the vertical markets and sectors that you have expertise in. I would also say get busy building a contact list of board influencers. You want to make sure that you are reaching out to search professionals, lawyers, auditors, other corporate directors, and knowing who they are. Tell you, this is a mistake I made when I was early in my career and I was thinking about doing board work. My network was all marketing professionals. That's the industry I came from. And so I needed to learn how to leverage the people I met in the boardroom, right? I had access to the boardroom. Well, I knew who our auditors were and I knew who our outside counsel was. And so it was a time for me to hurry up and make those connections. But if you're already in your C-suite role, leverage all of those people that you have access to and let them know that you are looking for board work and make sure that your credentials are ready and you can hand them across the table or send them to somebody in an email and say, this is how I think about board work and the type of places that I can be helpful. And let those connections make the right assumptions about where you might fit. Don't leave it to them to know you for who you are in the role that you're in, because you may have more skills than what they have access to. So the last part I would say about this is don't overlook the power of LinkedIn. A lot of us, when you get very high in your C-suite positions, will ignore LinkedIn. Sometimes it's even better, especially if you're on a public company board, to not do anything on LinkedIn. But it is a one-to-many platform, especially if you are trying to expand your network. It's also a place, if you're really judicious about it, where you can do some very targeted posts that talk about how you think about governance. And the value of this is once you're doing these posts, you're building a library of your personality and how you're going to show up in someone's boardroom. And so as professionals look at you and consider you for potential board roles, you're already telling them the kind of professional you're going to be. And so they can know whether or not you're a cultural fit. They can know whether or not you have the right skill set for their board. And it becomes a filtering tool, but it also becomes a place where you can take all of those contacts that you're building and tag them. I just put out this post. I thought that this might be interesting to you. And this way, you're keeping your connections very fresh. It's hard to have coffee with thousands of people, right? But it's easy to put out a post and connect to hundreds to thousands of people in your network and let them know, really interested in governance, and here's a topic that's really near and dear to my heart. So don't overlook the one to many that is LinkedIn, but get those one-to-one connections. You already have them. You're already a governance professional, so you're in the boardroom and you're meeting all the right people. Just lean in a little bit more and let them know that you're interested in board work or furthering your career path, and let them guide you a little bit.
Yeah, people don't know unless you tell them. And I love that tip about tagging people on LinkedIn in posts that you think could be relevant to them. I really like when people do that for me. It reminds me, oh, they're thinking about me, which is kind of nice. And sometimes the algorithm doesn't give you that content. And so it's nice to, have it pinged in your notifications.
And even nicer, Liz, if you then repost to your network, because that person now has access to so so many more people that they never knew before. And that's where you get that one to many effect.
Well, aside from strenuous networking and making sure you have a presence on LinkedIn, what are the top three pieces of advice you generally provide to your C-suite leader clients who are seeking executive coaching or board readiness training?
So I'll be a little repetitive here, but this is a good summary for us. So number one, start your journey while you're in your C-suite role. I have so many folks that call me up, Suzanne, I'm so excited. I'd like to work with you. Coach me on becoming a board director. I just left my C-suite job. And I think, oh, darn, I wish you had called me a year ago, because you can use that last year to two of being in a C-suite role to really gain as much access as possible to the board, make those connections with those influencers. And ideally, you would land your first board role before you leave that C-suite. Because as I mentioned, your first role is likely going to be landed because of the industry experience that is very current that you have. As soon as you leave it, your skills become a little bit stale. So in order for you to not look stale or fall behind the other competitors that are in the market, because it's a crazy competitive market out there, right? Land your first role before you leave that C-suite. So that's number one, start your journey while you're in the C-suite. Number two, I would say really clearly understand where you can add value. Understand that you are in a market sector and there's plenty of adjacent sectors that could be really interesting for you that you could serve. Of course, understand where your conflicts are, but there's probably a really nice big concentric circle or two that you can reach out to where you would be a good fit. Make sure that you articulate the skills that you're unique at. So if you have good M&A skills, if you have good sustainability skills, whatever they might be able to pull them together and articulate them really crisply so that people understand where you intersect. And then lastly, on this one, make sure you understand the size of company you can serve. I can't tell you how many times I have a client come and I say, well, what would be your ideal board role? And they'll say, oh, I'd like to sit on the Apple board. Well, you're not going to sit on the Apple board. If you helped grow a company to be a $1 billion company, you're probably really well served to serve a $500 million company. And the reason is you know what 500 million to a $1 billion looks like. So now you can sit on that board and add value by helping them with their growth strategy because you've been there and you've done that. So understand where you've come from and then how you can best serve organizations that would like to get to that position. That's your sort of target market exercise that you need to do. And then lastly, I would say clearly and widely articulate your board value proposition. You built that list of contacts. All of your board knows that you're interested in board work. Campaign yourself. It, you know, especially as women, we don't like to boast about what we've done. We tend to be a little bit modest, but you have to campaign yourself in order to find your board seats. Let everyone that you know that you are interested in board work. When you're going and doing that networking, bring your bio with you or at least have a dialogue with that person about what it is you're seeking. So the market knows, to Liz's point earlier, if you don't tell them that you're looking, then they're not going to keep you in mind, right? So you've got to stay top of mind. Speak at conferences on topics around governance that you're really suited to address and utilize all of those contacts to really be good about proliferating your story.
So building on that great advice, what advice would you give to the next generation of women governance trailblazers?
I'm going to be a broken record here. Gain as much access to the boardroom and your board directors as you can. I mean, you have every committee that is part of your board needs help. And so if you raise your hand and say, I'd really love to help, you know, the Nom and Gov committee with these next steps, you probably are going to get an invitation to help. So ask for that access and gain as much of it as you possibly can. Secondly, I would say stay close to the P&L. Every good board professional, every good governance professional truly understands the P&L. I'm not saying that you have to be a qualified financial expert, but I'm saying you really have to understand the books. I see too many people want to go into board roles, but they want to sit over on Nom and Gov because they don't want to be asked to be on audit. That's the wrong answer. You should walk in the door wanting to be on audit and understanding that P&L because it's going to help you be the best possible board director that you can be. I would say to be a lifelong learner. The last thing that boards want is to have to teach you how to be a good board director. So if you can articulate and be clear that you've been going to EY's site and you've been going to the NASDAQ Center for Excellence and you've been reading these resources and maybe reflecting on them and your LinkedIn posts, people will know that you're this lifelong learner and you don't have to be taught how to understand industries and governance. So just consume that information and use your AI tools to do that consolidation for you. Two more, I would say surround yourself with mentors. I've had so many generous mentors in my years. And, often if you ask people to help, they want to help you. So don't be afraid to ask. And you'll have, if you're smart, mentors of different experiences and different types. And that is okay. Surround yourself with as many people as you can that are interested in helping you on your pathway and keep them informed about what it is you're doing. It doesn't have to be onerous. You don't have to be having lunch with them every week. But if it's a once a quarter, twice a year type thing and you're touching base to say, here's how I'm progressing, would love to touch base with you at some point. They are the people that will most likely remember you and network you into opportunities. And then finally, don't be afraid to tell the market about your strengths. Again, as women, we typically don't like to boast, but your competition is out there doing it. So if you want to get the attention from the market, you have to let people know your strengths. And this is where LinkedIn and a really good profile is smart because it's the first place a nomin gov chair or a search professional is going to go to see whether or not you're a potential fit for a board position or a C-suite position. And if your LinkedIn profile doesn't articulate clearly that value proposition, you will be overlooked and other people will usurp that position. So you've got to promote yourself. I know it feels weird and unusual. And again, as you elevate in the ranks, you do less and less promotion, right? I remember being a CEO and I was very quiet about my own promotion and the work that I'm doing and telling the market about my strengths and so on. And then it came time to search for additional board seats and I had to come out of hiding, right? I had to come out and tell the market what I'm doing. You can do that while you're in the C-suite, and you can be articulating the strengths that you're bringing to the company you're serving or the nonprofit that you're working with. Don't be shy. Tell your story. It's not boasting, and don't make it sound like boasting. Make it sound like value that you're adding both to the top line, the bottom line, the shareholders.
That's all great advice, and thank you so much for all of it, Suzanne, and for joining us today.
Ladies, it was such a pleasure. Thanks for your great questions and for letting me wax on about how much fun I had in my governance career. It was really fun meeting the both of you.
Oh, it was great hearing about it. Yeah, this was excellent. Thank you so much. And for those who are listening, we want to thank you as well. Please subscribe to Women Governance Trailblazers on whatever platform you use for podcasts. We would love if you would rate us while you're there. And in addition, if you know a woman governance trailblazer who you think would be a great guest on this show, feel free to ping Courtney or me on either LinkedIn or by email. Thanks, everyone.